The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
Rick Astley, you're surprisingly unengaged with yourself singing there in the background. I thought you might hum along.
No, I'm all out of hums this morning, I think. Had a few pints last night, and I'm not worse for wear, but I know I was out last night, let's put it that way.
Are we allowed to say who you bumped into? Are you breaching somebody's confidence?
Well, no, I don't know, but I mean, she might have been having a private, you know, she was with her mum, but
That's okay then, that's fine. You can't get in trouble for being out with your mum.
Yeah, no, a national treasure.
A national treasure, that's a good way to put it.
I'm talking about Sharon Horgan from, obviously from many things, but Bad Sisters.
Who you just bumped into randomly?
She was just in the pub last night. I'm sorry, Sharon, if you didn't want me to let the world know that.
She's
I was stopped in my tracks because I love that show. I mean, she's been in so many great things.
But have you ever met her before?
No. But my wife and I absolutely love that show, and I think the writing is incredible, and it's just brilliant, and we've been glued to the whole thing about it, and...
Did you just go up and say, "I'm Rick Astley, how are you?"
Well,
Sharon?
I did after the second pint, yeah. but I also think it's a weird one that, and obviously I'm on the receiving end of that sometimes. But I think if someone comes over and is genuinely, it's not just like, "Oh, can I have a selfie because you're famous?" It's like if somebody actually, you know, does it in a nice way, and obviously I'm a massive fan, so that's a big difference, I think, you know.
What's the nicest way anybody has ever done it to you?
Mrs. I think what happens sometimes is I can see people are really like too shy to come over, if you know what I mean.
That peripheral vision thing where you know you've been clapped.
So occasionally I'll just go, you know what, I'm just going to go over. So I'll walk over and go, "Oh, how are you doing?" And then they'll sort of, do you know what I mean? Because I know they want to, because I can see the motions of it. I've been doing this for a while.
So you'll go to them?
Sometimes, because I just want to put them out of their misery, do you know what I mean? And also for my wife and I, if we're having dinner or we're doing whatever, then it's done. You know what I mean? It's not like somebody looking at us from a, you know what I mean, and all of that. And I mean, to be honest, I'd say 99.9% of the time people are lovely, just want a selfie, just want to say hi, just want to whatever. So it's all cool.
Well, you see, part of the challenge that I suspect you have, and you'll forgive me for being past remarkable, you still look very like you.
You're a lovely man. I've still got my hair, and I think that's the main...
Oh, it's more than still got it. Hey, it's
come
magnificent.
On. Come
it's
on.
Magnificent. Come on. It's thick. It's lush.
Yes. I think that's one of the big things. I think, for instance, like if I've not got it in a quiff, and it's always in a quiff, it just wants to be in a quiff. Since I was born, my hair's been in a quiff, really. But so I guess, yeah, I think.
But you haven't gone to seed. Like, you haven't thrown on 6 stone and given up on
no,
your appearance.
No, I've got a few pounds on me right now.
Not really.
I have. No, come on. No, you, no honestly. Well,
we throw you in an open neck shirt and
honestly,
a blazer. We're pretty much back on MTV.
Well, last night I had a suit on the Late Late Show, and I'm telling you, I squeezed into it, man. Because I've had a few holidays this year. We haven't really been gigging this year. We haven't been up to a lot this year. We've kind of had a down year, and that was a choice. That was kind of like, I need to take stock of what's going on. I'm going to be 60 next year. I just wanted to just kind of like be match fit for next year as well, because, you know, we're at it again, full on with gigs next year, and I just wanted a proper little break. So
you
I've been on holidays
at big scale when you were at your.
Oh no, I retired. I didn't have a break. I retired. I was done and finished and done. And also because, let's face it, I was in the really frothy end of pop music. Nothing wrong with that, but I was, and I think very few people ever come back from that, and I haven't really come back from that. I'm not doing anything on that level. Do you know what I mean? That I was back in the day, but it's just it's been pretty epic what has happened. You know, I've made new music. And when we do gigs these days, I get to play pretty much like half and half, half 80s, you know, one scraped into the 90s. And then the rest of it is kind of new songs and stuff.
Did you retire because you hated it? Was that what it was? Was it the,
oh,
did you
hate
the stardom
a bit
thing?
Strong, hate's a bit strong, but I certainly didn't like it anymore. I didn't really like me anymore, if I'm honest, I think. And that took me a long time to realize that. I did a lot of therapy in my late 20s, and that was a lot about... my childhood and what made me get on a stage, I think. Because I have a belief, and I'm not saying I'm right in this, but I'm certainly right for me, and that is that most people who end up being on a stage aren't just doing it for the music or the love of being in a play or what have you. We're kind of searching for something, I think, and we're searching for it perhaps in front of 10,000 people or 500 people or whatever it is, and you're not going to find it there. You've got to find it in your own life and in your own, you know, your own community, as it were, the other thing is gorgeous and lovely, and it fills your batteries. My God, does it fill your batteries? But it's not going to, it won't really make you happy, I don't think. Not for me, anyway.
Because I had seen sort of commentary, I don't know, was it a direct quote from your commentary on you that said that part of your reasoning was your own upbringing made you want not to replicate that for your own daughter.
For sure, yeah, for sure. Yeah, my dad and my mum had a very tricky marriage. They divorced when I was about four. They'd had a son who died of meningitis before I was born, and in fact before the next eldest, Mike, was born. And I think they just carried on having kids, and they, you know, there's four of us now, kind of thing. I'm the youngest. And I think they both probably had breakdowns, and I can say this now, they're both passed. They passed in the last few years, and I did an autobiography last year. Paperback's out now, folks. I think I wanted to wait till they passed away. You know, I'd been asked to do it when I was young, even, and just kind of said, look, there isn't enough there, really, you know.
Well, let me ask you two questions off that. Were you a better parent than them, and were you a better parent than them because of them?
Well, better is for someone else to judge, really. And I just,
you must have reflected on.
Well, we have a daughter, one daughter, and she's 33 now, and she's not a kid herself. You know, she got married last year, and I've talked to her a little bit about it, you know, because she's a woman, she's not a kid. And obviously, hopefully, you know, they're going to have children as well, you know, with a bit of luck. And so I think it's important just to sort of not, you can't ask your own kids, have I been a good dad? That's a bit strange.
You'd love to, though, wouldn't
but,
you?
Well, but you know, she tells me she's proud of me a lot, and, you know, and vice versa. I say that to her all the time. I think my siblings and I, we all probably made a point of saying we don't want to do it like our parents. Whether we're going to be better than them is whatever, but we're not doing it that way. And all my siblings are all with the same partners they've been with for donkey's years, and they've all got kids. And it's not like all of us have just breezed through life. Kids, families, everything. There's just stuff that comes with that, and it's not always positive. But I think we've all at least put a flag in the ground and gone, well, this is, you know, the book stops here, and therefore we're going to change it if we can, you know.
Talk to me about the news this week that MTV is, I don't know if you've seen this, but MTV, everywhere except the States, has abandoned music programming. They're taking it off Europe, they're taking it everywhere else, they're going back. Because as I understand it, now maybe I have this wrong, I think you were at that sort of first cusp where you couldn't release records and sing, you had to have the video to make it work.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it had been going on before my time. I started in 87, and the bizarre thing was we didn't have a video for Never Gonna Give You Up until the week that it went to number one. But I also think there's a tiny element there that, because I don't think people forgot, you know, you couldn't put a single out without a video in 1987. That just wasn't really possible.
Just a MTV, week to turn it around. Oh, Lord.
Well, it was, and I think it was partly because the guys who made that record, Starcake Kim Waterman, weren't completely convinced about it. I was signed to RCA Records through them. And in the end, RCA, because I've been signed for about 18 months, and we had that song in the bag for almost a year. And in the end, they just said, look, you're just going to have to put the record out. We're putting it out. So they did that. They used the photograph is from a session I did with a girl called Lisa. And we did this track that Waterman just wanted to get in the clubs. Partly, he says, to get my voice heard before they actually put the main record out. So it wasn't a proper release, but it went to clubs and stuff. And I think you could physically buy it. But anyway, so we did a photo session, Lisa and I. And so they basically just used one of the photographs where they could just use me, and they just stuck it on the cover because they hadn't done that. And I think that came down to that they, and I've again, only going over the years and thinking back and perhaps hearing Mike Stock talk about it a little bit, I think they just weren't convinced. And so I think it took them by surprise. They were a bit, they're just going to stick it out and see what happens. And sure enough, it went to number one. So we made the video in the week that it went to number one. So that's insane, you know.
That must be the weirdest thing, to go from anonymity to... Because also in the 80s, when you did land a number one, it was...
Oh, no, it was monster, I I mean, I know it's easy to, have false modesty in this, that and the other, because I didn't write it and I didn't produce it. So, yeah, it's my record and I'm proud of it and everything. And I still like singing it. It's still... You know, the last song of the night, pretty much every gig I ever did in my life.
You're sick of it. You have to.
No, because
you must be cynical and dead inside.
Because I didn't do it. I didn't sing it for like 10 or 15 years. The only time I sang it was at my family's weddings and friends' weddings. I didn't sing it. I actually wasn't pursuing a music career for a good 10 or 15 years with me singing. I wanted to write songs for people and I tried that, but failed. Yeah, so I haven't done it for 30 odd years. So, and also I think I had the perspective when I came back to appreciate what it was. I think if you've lived with it constantly forever, a song like that, yeah, can be a millstone around your neck. And for me, it's like, I literally thank God for it. Honest to God, I've almost been emotional about it at times, thinking, I've had an amazing life. I've had a really stress-free, beautiful life. I've got an amazing partner. I've got an amazing daughter. I've got some great friends like that dude who's in that room over there. We went to school. Phil and I were in a band together when we were 15.
Nice of Phil to get out the scratches this morning.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
And I've, you know, I still feel at all ends of the spectrum, I feel my life has been pretty amazing. Yes, my childhood wasn't necessarily a picture book childhood, by far from it. But I also think that was what made me want to...
And that's not rose-tinted glasses. That is your genuine, in those quiet moments of solitude, you look at your life and go,
I do it very often. I do it very, very often.
What a nice thing to be able to say.
Yeah, but I also think that's also because I did quit. I mean, listen, don't get me wrong. I wasn't like, you know, I don't think like the nation went into mourning because I'd quit. I think it was like, you know, whatever. I don't think anybody noticed, really, because I was at the end of my moment, I think. You know, my 15 minutes of fame, whatever you want to call it, it was like, you know what? I'm better off walking away now before they throw me out. You know what I mean? And I think because I had that huge break from it, I just totally appreciate it. And a lot of the gigs I've done with other people from that time, you know, like a, more of a style of a rewind sort of gig, I've absolutely loved those as well, because you just see something in people's eyes when they have nostalgia for something, and it's kind of gorgeous.
We have to do the important bit. You are going to be headlining Belfast SSE Arena on April 13th, and you're going to be in the Three Arena here in Dublin on April 14th with special guest Gabrielle as part of the Reflection Tour. So April 14th is the Dublin gig in Three Arena. Rick, I know this is theoretically what one is meant to say at the end of these interviews, but it is genuinely felt. It has been a great pleasure meeting you.
Thank you. Lovely to meet you. Nice chat.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.